Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm your host, John Peters, joined today by Kyle McKelvey and later on in the podcast, Mason Choate. Today, we're recapping midweek action and looking ahead to the fourth weekend of college baseball. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, lovely to see you once again.
Same to you. Twice in one week.
Anything new going on in the life of Kyle McKelvey?
No, not really. Starting a D&D campaign on Friday. That's kind of cool.
Oh, let's start a D&D podcast, like the thousands of D&D podcasts. I think there's more people, more D&D podcasts than there are people who play D&D in the world.
Yeah, you're probably right. This is my first time ever playing it, so I have like no idea what's happening. The DM wants us to come up with a backstory for our character, and I'm like, I don't know. He was born in West Philadelphia. I don't know. Born and raised.
Remember a few weeks ago when I called you a nerd for liking stats?
It's upping it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is, you're heading down a path, Kyle, and I'm worried that you're going to hit a point of no return at some point.
No, I'm already well beyond that point.
Yeah, at least you have a climbing board behind you. I think rock climbing is like anti-nerdy. That feels anti-nerdy.
Yeah, I feel like I have to balance myself out. So I have to have a college baseball podcast and the climbing thing, and then I go the other side. You know?
Yeah, with your spreadsheets and your D20 rolls.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely trying to be extra nerdy this time.
Let's head into our top story, which is, like mini week at this point, there are quite a few midweek upsets, but I think some of them are a little bit more interesting than other. Let's run through a few of them really quick. Santa Clara over Stanford, UT Arlington knocks off TCU, Coastal Carolina took out Wake, and I think most interestingly, Boston College traveled to Knoxville and beat Tennessee. While we're talking about some of these, I think it's worth mentioning that Florida Gulf Coast beat Troy to knock Troy from the ranks of unbeatens. I don't think it's an upset. We had Florida Gulf Coast ranked higher, but the fact that we lost an unbeaten is notable. But let's talk a little bit about that Boston College game, because Boston College, that was a team we considered ranking last week. They were in the discussion for that last, the number 50 in their top 50.
Mr. Irrelevant,
exactly. I think that's going to open some eyes nationally about Boston College.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had talked about even having a segment on our podcast on Monday about, like, is Boston College dangerous? Do we have to, like, should we worry about them? Like, they started out the year winning a series at Pepperdine, dominating that series, and they haven't really played anybody else since, like, besides this Tennessee series or the Tennessee game. And they've traveled on the road for most of their series so far. So this is, it's going to be interesting. They have a tough challenge coming up this weekend at Virginia Tech, who was a super regional team last year. And it's still ranked pretty highly after losing quite a bit of that. They brought back the hammer, though, which is, I thought it was cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. But the one thing that this makes me think about, though, is the 2021 iteration of Boston College, which swept on the road at Charleston Southern, then won a series on the road at Duke, and then won that series, that absolutely wild series at Auburn. There was a coming from behind. Yeah. I think they were down, was it like 9-0 or something like that in that last game against Auburn? And then they scored it was 8 in the 9th. So they were down 9-1. They scored 8 in the 9th and 2 in the 10th to win that game in Auburn, that series. And they entered into our top 50 then, and they finished the season 21-28 that year. So I think that's a really weird thing to see. It's really weird to see a team be successful on the road early in the season, being a cold weather team, and then falling apart. But like you've mentioned, they've had a couple of nice series wins so far. And all of a sudden they knock off Tennessee and they're 9-1. So good job, Boston College. Quite the interesting start to the year for them.
Yeah. I want to see if they can keep it up. This is a fun test. I don't think we have them. It's kind of spoiler alert. I don't think we have them for our pick'em coming up, but still curious.
Next up on the podcast, we're welcoming in Mason Choate, the managing editor for hogbeat.com, as well as Diamond Hogs podcast. Mason, First off, before we get going, just want to say, if anyone's listening and is remotely a college baseball fan, this guy is a must follow on Twitter. He covers Arkansas baseball better than I think anyone covers any college baseball team. So feel really gracious, really lucky to have you on the podcast, Mason.
Hey, I appreciate that. And, you know, I try my best to cover Arkansas baseball. And, you know, Tennessee fans, if they're listening to this, they think that I cover their team as much as any other team as well. I just like to have a good laugh when Tennessee loses. So I know that you have a bigger fan base on this podcast, and I just want Tennessee fans to know that I'm glad that they lost on Tuesday night.
Instantly stirring the pot. First thing you do, first words out of your mouth here, just come to stir the pot. But I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Arkansas. Arkansas has been bit by the injury bug, especially when we're thinking about the arms. We knew Jackson Wiggins was going to be out, and the injuries have just kept coming. So can you just fill us in a little bit? Just what are the injuries right now with Arkansas's pitching staff, both starters and rotate and bullpen guys? And do we have any information about timeline for return for some of these guys?
Yeah, so you mentioned Jackson Wiggins. It was the projected ace, a guy who's probably going to throw over 100 innings this season. They lost him before the year, torn UCL. He had Tommy John surgery. That was unfortunate. That was the first blow. But at that point, you know, you're like, okay, well, you lose this guy, but they still got a lot of depth. They should be okay. It's unfortunate to lose him. And then, you know, last week in a midweek, Brady Tigert, you know, the bullpen ace, their closer, he throws a pitch and then starts shaking his arm out and calls for the trainers immediately. And you're like, oh my goodness, if this is what we think it is, then, you know, that's really, really bad for Arkansas. After, you know, they got the first results back and it was a UCL strain, maybe 5 to 6 weeks. And then it seems like they also did an MRI with the dye where, you know, it pulls up a little bit more details. And it seems like they got the results they wanted. And it's that 5 to 6 week timeline with Brady Tigert, which is good. He should be back mid-April if all goes well. That's what you're hoping. If there's any hiccups, it could be longer than that. But that's their bullpen ace. It's their closer. They want him back. And then after that, you're like, man, it's unfortunate, but, you know, he's not done for the year. As far as we know, that's okay. And then you have Jake Faherty, who's not projected to be he's not going to throw a lot of innings if he was healthy. But just another injury. Jake Faherty, we don't really know exactly how long he's going to be out, but he's a bullpen guy that, you know, he could have come along. He can get up to 100 miles an hour. He's a hard-throwing right-hander. He goes down. We don't know, you know, what exactly happened. We don't know how long he's going to be out. And then on
Sunday – It just keeps coming.
Yeah, on Sunday against Wright State, Cody Frank, who is, you know, once Tigert went down, you're like, okay, they still have Cody Frank. Really good bullpen piece transfer from Nebraska. On Sunday against Wright State, he throws his second pitch of his outing, the second pitch, and he's hurting. And the trainers come out and look at him. They talk to him. He throws a practice pitch, just, you know, gets back on the mound, throws a pitch, and he just bends over in pain. And he's holding his lat area. It doesn't look good. He has to come out of the game. We talked to Dave Van Horn on Monday. He was like, if it's what we hope it is, what we think it is, he should be out 5 to 6 weeks. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, this is great. Not great, but it's better than what it could have been, kind of like with the Tigert situation. And then we hear from Dave Van Horn after the Army game on Tuesday, Cody Frank's done for the year. So now you're without two of your guys who were supposed to eat up a lot of innings in Jackson Wiggins and Cody Frank for the year, and you're without Brady Tigert until hopefully mid-April. Like, that's, you know, thinking positively, like, this is when you could get Brady Tigert out or Brady Tigert back. So it's just been really unfortunate. And to lose two of those guys of a bullpen that Dave Van Horn said was his deepest he's ever had. I need to clarify that. A lot of people think he said it was the best. He said it was the deepest. And so now it's no longer that. And they're going to need guys to step up.
Yeah, looking ahead to mid-April, April 14th, that weekend is the weekend that Arkansas hosts Tennessee. So having Tigert back by then would obviously be a big help. If not, though, that would be Tennessee, Ole Miss, and LSU series for Arkansas without one of the best bullpen arms in the country. Mason, what are your thoughts on who's going to step up? Who's going to plug in these holes? What's the best case scenario 6 weeks from now? Let's say Arkansas is winning weekend series still. Like, what has to happen between now and Tigert's possible return for Arkansas to still be competitive against the LSUs and the Auburns, Louisiana Techs, all these big series that they have coming up?
Well, so right now they've had one guy step up specifically, Dylan Carter. He's a redshirt sophomore right-hander. He's eaten up a lot of innings since these injuries have come along, and he's looked really good. I mean, David Horn said on Tuesday night that he was working and he had some nasty off-speed stuff. Dylan Carter's looked good, and I wouldn't say we really expected that from him coming into this season, and that's no knock on Dylan Carter, but, you know, there were some bigger names that you were hoping would – you know, do things such as Zach Morris, who was really good in the postseason for Arkansas last year. He's had just a horrible start to the season. He's getting hit around. He's struggling to locate pitches. That's a guy that they were expecting to be good this year. He's a senior left-hander. You need that guy. You need a left-hander like him to come out of the bullpen and do well. And he just hasn't. So, like, if you're talking best case scenario, it's that Zach Morris comes along. Will McIntyre, the Saturday starter, another veteran guy they're expecting to get a lot of innings out of. I mean, he hasn't been great to start the year. So maybe Will McIntyre comes along, you know, goes a little bit longer in his starts. That would be good for Arkansas. But Dylan Carter coming along has been good. We've heard a lot about some of these freshman pitchers that they have. Like, they got a guy in Gage Wood that they really like. He's a hard-throwing right-hander. You know, Cooper Dossett, another hard throwing right hander. Parker Coyle got the start, left hander, got the start against Army on Tuesday. Like, those are freshman arms that they would like to get to come along between now and, you know, hopefully whenever Tiger's able to come back. It's just, you know, they're freshmen. They got to figure out how to perform on the big stage, college baseball. And you're starting to see them come along a little bit. But if Arkansas keeps playing close games like they did against Army on Tuesday, where, you know, they were down for most of the game and they had it took a 3-run home run from Kendall Diggs in the bottom of the eighth for them to even take the lead, that's when it's like you can't really get those freshman arms out there because you got to win the game. Like, that's something we heard from Dave Van Horn on Tuesday, was they wanted to get a freshman lefty and Sean Fitzpatrick out there on the mound late in the game, but they couldn't because they needed to keep Dylan Carter out there to win the game. So, a long-winded answer to say, best case scenario, you have some of those older guys like Zach Morris, Will McIntyre come along, freshman pitchers come along, but they need to get ahead in games where they can get those freshman pitchers in there to get some innings, figure out how to perform in the real game rather than in scrimmages and such.
Well, silver lining to all of this, I think we see time and time again freshmen contributing to postseason runs, because by the time you get to the end of a freshman year, you're, you know, totally different guy than when you start. And so maybe Arkansas freshmen will be given an opportunity to grow up real fast, being thrown into some real situations here. Meanwhile, though, the Arkansas offense top 35 in the country in runs. So at least the Arkansas offense is allowing maybe a few more mistakes coming out of the pen for the Arkansas pitching staff.
Yeah, the offense, they brought in some transfers. You think about Jared Wagner. It's spelled Wagner, but it's pronounced Wagner for those listening. He a transfer from Creighton. I mean, he's incredible, man. He's had a great start to the season. Caleb Cowley, JUCO transfer, coming along. And then, of course, you got some returners and Brady Slavens, Peyton Stovall, Jace Borfin. Those guys, great start to the season. If they can keep it up, like you said, it'll help them be able to get younger guys out there. But it's like, you also have to have the veteran guys or whoever starts the game on the mound. They've got to keep the run limit from the opponent down so that they can get those guys in there. So there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Well, Mason, thanks so much for joining us and giving us all your great insights into Arkansas baseball. Best of luck with the coverage, SEC basketball tournament, SEC spring football, everything you got going on covering Arkansas. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Next up on the podcast, a new segment called Notable and Quotable. We'll give you either some notable statistics or a quotable thing that someone said in the world of college baseball. Today we have one of each for you, and let's start off diving into relishing in Kyle's nerdiness once again, but in a way that I think is productive. And
encouraging me.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Florida, because for those of you at home who've been following Florida, you might realize that with Waldrop and Cags and Sproat, they have had quite the start of the year with their rotation, but their bullpen ERA is kind of off the charts. And so the notable statistic we're going to talk about is FIP, fielding independent pitching, versus ERA. And Kyle, can you give me a little bit of a rundown of what you found so far about the FIP and the ERA for Florida, but start us off with, like, what is FIP and why should we care about FIP?
Yeah, so FIP, like you said, is fielding independent pitching. So it basically focuses on the events a pitcher has the most control over. So strikeouts, unintentional walks, hits by pitch, and home runs. So it basically, like, doesn't...
So just gets rid of the defense. Who needs the defense?
Well, it's a better way, in a lot of people's opinions, of trying to figure out how good a pitching staff itself is, instead of, like we were talking about before, like, if there's, like, an 85-mile-an-hour exit velocity hit ball that just kind of, like, bloops over the over the shortstop or something accidentally, or maybe there's, like, a bunt hit or something that the defense, like, wasn't shifted right for. That doesn't really show that, like, the runner's on base and maybe he comes in for an earned run, but it doesn't really show how good the pitcher itself is. That was more like the defense wasn't like positioned right,
or sometimes just random.
Yeah,
like, or sometimes random stuff happens. And I think, I mean, you say it's the opinion of some. I think it's actually factual too that fielding independent pitching, FIP, is more predictive of future ERA than current ERA is. And that's kind of a hard one to wrap one's mind around. Yeah. I think that, like, ERA is not the most, ERA is descriptive, right? It tells you how a pitching staff has done in terms of earned runs given up, right? It's not predictive. It doesn't predict future ERA particularly well. FIP actually does a better job of that.
It's kind of like an offensive statistic, BABIP, batting average on balls in play. That's something for another time, but it's like basically that is the offense's, like, luck factor. Like, if you hit the ball somewhere, if you got on base, if you keep getting on base, or I don't know, something like that, that's like a more of a luck factor. And so that's like the actual, like, an offensive stat. And so this is kind of the opposite for FIP. So
Florida. Tell us about, so Florida's staff ERA as a whole is 142nd in the country. I feel that's not very good, but what does FIP have to say about it?
Yeah, so their FIP, they're 29th in the country in total staff FIP. So that just goes to show you that their offense, their pitching staff is actually doing a lot better. And so this kind of gets into the question about the starters and the bullpen. Their bullpen ERA is pretty sky high. It's a 6.5 ERA. I don't know what that's good for in the country because we don't have all that data available. But their starter ERA is 3.8.
That one's not surprising. We knew the starters are good.
Yeah, we know the starters are good. But the starter FIP is 3.8 also. So it's really close to starter ERA, which is
kind of the starters are what we thought they were, is what that tells me.
And then the bullpen FIP is like a whole run lower than the ERA, which, oh boy, that's I think that means that the bullpen is better than what it's doing right now, but still worse than the starters.
I think that makes sense. Okay. So we see that their bullpen FIP is 1.7 runs worse than their starter FIP. I don't think anyone's surprised by that. We know Florida's strength is their rotation. But that FIP for the bullpen is also a run better than the bullpen ERA, which means you're right, exactly, that bullpen is probably better than what their ERA has shown us so far this year.
But worse than the starters.
Worse than the starters. I mean, it's hard to do. You got a couple first-round picks there, probably. So maybe not a couple, at least one first-round pick. So I think here's my takeaway. I have been so excited about Florida, especially that offense, that I think I've had a little bit of a blind spot when it comes to how their bullpen has been performing. Now I can ignore that blind spot and just say, you know what, maybe the bullpen will get better. And so now I can really sink my teeth into my Florida bias right now and say, you know what, Florida has been winning games even with the bullpen not performing particularly well. And here we have a little bit of data that says the Florida bullpen probably will be better moving forward.
And I think we should work on the on Cags, his nickname. Apparently, there's a thing going around, the Jackhammer, JAC.
Ooh, that's good.
I like it a lot.
That's good. Yeah.
I think that's what you should go for.
Quotable quotes. So, let's not look at the podcast sheet for a second, Kyle. Who do you think said this? Quote, a disappointing loss. 9 unearned runs is going to get you beat every time, especially on the road. Kyle, you know which team gave up 9 unearned runs in the midweek?
I don't, but someone who lost that was not supposed to. So any of the teams that we talked about before.
That was Tom Walter, Wake Forest head coach. Wake Forest dropped a game to Coastal Carolina. They had seven errors in that game.
Ooh. How
Seven
many were in one
errors
inning? Let's
led
see.
to nine unearned runs. The one inning that I pulled out of that was they had it was the bottom of the third, I think. It was wait, our Coastal scored six runs on one hit.
Oh, God. Bottom of the second.
Bottom of the second, so one frame off. Yeah, so six runs on one hit, two errors. It was a three-run home run was the one hit in that inning.
That's
Yeah,
bad.
that's really bad. And I think there's two ways to look at this. One is seven errors is probably not going to happen again, and that a team that is able to keep it competitive when giving up when having seven errors, that says something about the offense and probably the pitching staff too. But also, they had seven errors in a game.
I think the record for most errors in a game, according to Warren Nolan, it says 15 by Colorado in 1952. 15 errors in one game.
Maybe that's why they shut down their baseball program.
Yeah. And last year, the record was 9 by Princeton in a game they lost 15-2, if that surprises you at all.
Yeah.
That's wild. So 7 is almost last year's record. It's pretty close. There were like only 4 games higher than that.
Let's turn to the fastest segment on the pod, 10 picks in 5 minutes. If you've listened to any of our other episodes this season, you'll know what this is about. We have 30 seconds apiece to defend our picks for weekend series coming up this weekend. Off the air, we've given each other five series. On the air, we're going to make our picks. And I believe, Kyle, you were first up in giving me a series.
Yeah. So you can pick number 31, Illinois, going to Coastal Carolina.
All right, let's start the clock. I, first of all, love this series, and I think it's a really clever one to give me. We've seen Illinois do a really good job on the road. So I think oftentimes you try to find road teams that you think are going to be successful. And so that makes it hard for me to pick. But then we have this Coastal team who literally we just talked about beat Wake. I really don't like this pick. I think Coastal, I mean, it's off to a good start to the year. What, 75% winning percentage, something like that. So Coastal, I think at home is going to be really tough to beat. So give me the Chanticleers in this one.
Ooh,
You
that's
get
tricky.
the Pac-12s opening weekend. So I'm going to give you UCLA at Oregon to start us off.
Give me UCLA. They're the better team. They're the more talented team. It's on the road, it's a little bit harder, but Oregon has had a pretty miserable offensive start to start the year. They are currently 240th in the country in WOBA. That is out of 305 D1 teams. That's not great.
Is that good?
It's not great. They had high expectations coming into the year, but then they lost that home series. They got swept in the home series by UC Santa Barbara, who's admittedly a good team, and they've won every other game. But I want to see them do more, and I haven't seen it. So UCLA. Now you get, where is that? NC State at Miami.
Man, NC State, one of the last undefeated teams in the country, just down to three. Traveling to Miami, not an easy place to win baseball games unless you're Florida. So I am gonna pick the Canes in this one. My like player to watch in this one is Andrew Walters, who I legitimately am shocked that he didn't get drafted higher and ended up back in college of baseball. This guy does not belong in college of baseball. He could be pitching in the major leagues right now. I don't know if he would be like the best closer in the major leagues, but like he could get some major leaguers out right now for sure. Conference USA series against, oh, this is non-conference. Look at me getting confused. Old Dominion at Charlotte. That's a Sun Belt Conference USA matchup.
It's hard. I mean, everything's changed this offseason.
Everything's changed.
I'm going Old Dominion. Their offense is probably too much for Charlotte's pitching staff right now with a 6.68 ERA. Good for almost 200th in the country.
But that Niners offense, pretty good too.
It is. No, that's true. That's true. I like Old Dominion overall, like as a well-rounded group. Only lost once on the year. Go ahead and give me Old Dominion coming in right under that 30-second timer. You're gonna pick Cal at Arizona.
This one's fun. I have not a lot to go on this one besides my home team bias. I think Arizona is going to take this one. Cal just had a little bit of a rough go in Frisco, and I think getting tested back to back on the road is a really hard way to go. So I'm going to take the Wildcats in this one. ACC play also gets going. So let's do a few ACC series. I'm going to give you Virginia at North Carolina.
Ooh, changing it up on me. Our spreadsheet shows a different one next, but that is okay. I think I went with North Carolina in this one. Virginia has a lot of really good stats, but I don't think they've played anybody so far this year.
Undefeated.
Undefeated, I know, but they haven't played anybody. It's the old they ain't played nobody, Paul. But I don't know. ECU's got that series loss. I mean, UNC's got that series loss to UNC in just the two games because other one is postponed. Has that been rescheduled yet? I don't think so. I know I took part of my time to ask a question, but give me UNC.
Pretty sure you also said UNC beat UNC in that
No,
series.
I said ECU.
Let's play the tape.
Let's roll back the tape. You can get Campbell at App State.
Give me the camels. I'm all in on the camels at this point.
You're feeling so
It's
camely.
feeling so camely. That's not that far for Campbell to travel. I know heading on the road is not easy, but they just won a series on the road at Louisiana. I think Louisiana is a better team than App State is. I think that with Cueller going on a Friday night, they're going to get it off to a 1-0 start to this series, and they just got to find one more good pitching performance and they'll have it in the bag. Give me the camels. Ooh, nice. How about Troy at UCF for you?
Yeah, so Troy's one of those other teams that fell from the ranks of the undefeated with a loss at home to Florida Gulf Coast last night. I think they're playing right now, if I'm not mistaken, in their second game of the midweek. Other than that, they hadn't really played that many people. UCF, on the other hand, swept a series at Clemson and then came home and lost to Georgia Southern. So they're all over the board. But I think that's enough to give me Troy on the road. I know it's a really close, like one of the road series with the road team is favored, but yeah, go ahead and give me Troy. And last for you is Notre Dame traveling to Georgia Tech.
I think if you had asked me this a week ago, it would have been pretty clearly Georgia Tech for me. I think Georgia Tech looked a little bit lifeless against Georgia in terms of, well, when it came around to Sunday, they did have a little bit better pitching. And then Notre Dame started off the year with a series loss, and I think that Georgia Tech would have been the easy pick. I still think I'm going to pick Georgia Tech here. I think Notre Dame's playing better of late, and I think Georgia exposed really how rough the Georgia Tech pitching staff is. But I do think that in maybe some high-scoring games, Georgia Tech gets this one done. Perhaps my favorite series of the weekend, we get the Iowa Hawkeyes traveling to the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Kyle, what do you got?
Man, if this would be like almost a no doubter, just for some reason, if Tech was able to score just one run more than they did in seven extra innings in Houston, it would just feel a lot easier to pick that. But their offense really struggled. They lost game two Rice when they only scored two runs in both their losses, and they blew out Michigan. And Iowa is the only team to beat the number one team in the country. I think that's still true. Man, I don't know, but it's in Lubbock. It's really hard to win it in Lubbock. So I think this is a bounce back week for the Red Raiders. Give me Texas Tech.
So that means that my picks are Coastal Carolina, Miami, Arizona, Campbell, and Georgia Tech. Who's your five?
My five are UCLA, ODU, Troy, UNC, and Texas Tech.
That sound means just one thing. Time to open up the mailbag. We have a few good questions today to answer. Let's start off with one from Juliet on Instagram. It's a fun one. Do you have any thoughts to this question? What are the NFL equivalents to college baseball teams?
I have one.
Go for it.
So this is the question was initially asked about the Cowboys, like who's the baseball team that most represents the Cowboys. I think it's USC, and there's not really any question. They have 12 national championships. They have the most in college baseball. And the Cowboys have like the second most, tied for the second most, I think, Super Bowls, but they haven't done anything in
But
a
what have
long
they
time.
done for us lately?
Yeah, exactly. Neither team has done a lot. I think that's kind of a no doubter.
I don't know. I could see an argument to be made for Texas a little bit, just because like the like proximity and like Texas, a lot of Texas fans are also Cowboy fans,
a lot
and
of money in
Texas.
both.
Yeah, Texas is. I mean, I don't know. Cowboys have had some, let's say, playoff appearances and like. And I don't know, you know, no championships to show. I guess Texas has the more recent baseball championship than the Cowboys do.
That was my thought too, or like Fullerton or Rice or something, but like those two don't have as much success comparatively.
Yeah.
I don't know, or maybe LSU, but they won in 2009, so it was hard. It's hard to pick. Another one for me that's kind of like a strange one. It's I'm going like a really old team that hasn't done anything to show for it in a long time. I'll go for the Lions. They're a really old team, and I think they are like the Fordham Rams. Fordham has played 150 seasons of college baseball. They have the most wins all time by like over 1,000, but they haven't done anything lately.
If you had to like have me list 100 college baseball teams that you were
you
going to bring
there.
Up, Fordham that would not have been one of the top 100 for sure.
Yeah,
who are the Patriots? Well, like I think like I mean maybe the Patriots now post Tom Brady are a little bit different
LSU.
Than the Patriots were, but I don't know. I feel like at least with like attitudes towards the Patriots, it feels like more similar to attitudes towards Tennessee right now. Mm. But Tennessee doesn't have like the 5 Super Bowl rings or whatever it was that Tom Brady had while in New England.
Yeah, I think it'd be LSU of like the 90s. They had like those 6 championships, or maybe like 90s and early 2000s. They had like 6 championships in 12
yeah, that
years.
Seems fair.
Yeah.
What about the Bears? Who are like the most cursed team in college baseball?
Oh, I mean, if we're just going by like College World Series appearances without a title, I think it's Florida State.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Good question, Juliet. Thank you.
Bryce on Instagram asked us what do we think of Tennessee's quote non-dominant start? And I think that's a good way of putting it.
Their words, not ours.
No, but I like that because like, I know it's not overreaction. It's not like Tennessee's been awful because they haven't been awful. But no. I think this was a team that we really expected to dominate in terms of the pitching staff. We had expectations for their offense that haven't been lived up to. I think some of that's with the like Ahuna controversy and the fact they lost like was 6 like offensive starters from a year ago. So like we knew there were going to be some growing pains. I'm not worried about Tennessee. That's kind of my short answer, because that pitching staff is going to be nearly untouchable, I think, in weekend series. And that's what we care about in college baseball for the most, weekend series. I have really struggled to find a pitching staff in the SEC that is going to be the clear favorite over that pitching staff. I think LSU's is going to be, going to run for their money. But when we come to tournament play, they have the depth and pitching staff to survive a regional if they somehow end up in the loser's bracket. They have obviously a pitching staff that can win a super regional. This feels like a pitching staff that should be able to carry them really deep in the postseason. None of these, the midweek loss to Boston College, week one, couple of losses to Grand Canyon, Arizona, none of that is making me reevaluate Tennessee as a whole, as a unit.
I agree.
Excellent. We can move on to our last question, which is submitted by one of our biggest fans, and vice versa. We're one of their biggest fans. The 10-12 podcast on Instagram sent us the question, which Big 12 baseball team, thanks for clarifying that, most badly needs a series win this weekend?
I do it word for word. That wasn't a me ad-libbing. I copied the question exactly as he posted it. Yeah. I have the list, the setup of the series right now. But so I'll go. I think Texas needs a big turnaround. They play MAC team Manhattan at home.
They
went under the
be
radar.
Able to score runs against Manhattan.
Yeah, it kind of went under the radar. But we unranked Texas. I mean, of course they haven't really done well. But like we didn't really talk about.
We ranked 50
much.
Teams too. Like
I know.
They didn't follow the top 25. They followed the top 50.
They were in Omaha last year, and I know they lost a lot. But I think they're in desperate need of a few run rule victories to get right. And I think OU also needs that kind of a get right. They're playing at Houston, so maybe a little bit tougher than than hosting Manhattan, but I think both the Red River Shootout people need some need a good turnaround. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that those are really two good picks. I think just to add on to your thoughts about these two teams, right now we're working on a pre-conference play field of 64, and both of these teams, in my mind, I feel like are closer to the bubble than they are to hosting a regional. So, you know, mm-hmm. both of these teams are, we haven't finished it yet. I don't think both of these teams are going to be in the field of 64 unless there's a turnaround, which is,
I think you're right.
You wouldn't have guessed that coming into the year. I think that both of these would be out. But to add on to something that's a little bit different, I'm going to think a little bit more about it from the contender perspective. So I think we have three contenders for the top of the Big 12 right now: TCU, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma State. And one thing that's a little bit interesting for me, I think with Texas Tech, we are both pretty optimistic about their non-conference schedule. We thought Gonzaga in four games would be really lifting for them. Gonzaga has struggled a little bit to start the year. And Texas Tech is hosting Iowa this weekend. Iowa has now turned into a much better series than we thought they would. Iowa's 10-1. So at the end of the day, RPI cares about how many wins your opponents have. This is a really good opportunity for Texas Tech to get some of those wins. You know, really beyond this, they have two games against Stanford and two games against Grand Canyon later on in the season. But Texas Tech is really running out of time in the non-conference to have some serious non-conference wins. And then TCU, I feel like every time I watch TCU, I feel like they should be winning more games than they are. I don't know. It just feels like they're better than their 7-5 record. They lost that home series to Florida State. That Florida State pitching staff, I thought, had one of its best weekends of the year then. They had a good showing in the Shriners College Classic with two shutout wins and just that one run loss to Louisville. And they did really well in the early season tournament, the College Baseball Showdown, beating Vanderbilt and Arkansas. But 7-5 is not the most convincing of starts. And they play against a San Diego team who's going to be really competitive in the West Coast Conference, just sitting right below 500 right now. But if you get a series sweep, for instance, if your TCU moved to 10-5, that feels like you're really heading in the right direction right before a Big 12 play starts. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. Why don't you share this with a friend? Why haven't you done that? You're the guy who's listening to this right now. Yeah, you, Kyle. How many people have you shared the podcast with in the last week?
My whole family.
All right, well, you're okay, but you listening right now, why haven't you shared the podcast with more people? Spread the word. It helps us get more ears on the podcast, and we would love to have as many people as possible listening about college baseball. Our socials are at collegeballnet, website's collegebaseball.info. Have a great weekend. Go watch a ton of college baseball, and we'll see you next week.